Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
I begin to look back and go, well, duh, no wonder I have this compelling, you know, drive to try to fix what's broken, because that's what I was born to do. Literally, yeah. That's kind of what I was brought into the world to do.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since
the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We are not.
You're not
the hero. This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. From a very early age, Stephen Curtis Chapman was compelled to fix what was broken. Stephen is a Christian music icon. Multiple Grammys, more than 50 Dove Awards, number one radio hits. He's one of the most successful Christian artists of all time. And one of the reasons so many of us are fans is because of his honesty in his music. His life has included both mountaintop experiences and devastating lows that would shake even the strongest person's faith. He's written songs about that journey, and a couple of years ago he wrote a book. It's called Between Heaven and the Real World, My Story. And he shared some of the broken parts of his story, including what happens to the faith of Mr. Fix-It when he faces the unfixable. This is chapter 26 of Epic, Stephen Curtis Chapman's story. So one of the things that you talk about, from a very early age, you felt compelled to fix things and kind of grew up with that identity as Mr. Fix-It.
Yes.
What did it look like being Mr. Fix-It early in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think you felt compelled to be that way?
I have learned a lot about that in myself, watching my own children and kind of my own story now as a parent. You know, I have children, particularly, you know, there's certain ones that are more wired that way to be the peacemaker, to be the, you know, rule follower. Please, you know, you show me where the boundaries are, and I'm going to operate, you know, well within that, so that I can, you know, keep the peace. I can keep things on the rails. But I remember there was a time when my parents, before they had really begun to commit their lives to the Lord and really ask Jesus to kind of be a part of our family's, you know, daily life, there was a lot of conflict, and it didn't miraculously go away when my parents committed their lives to the Lord, but they responded very differently after that. And instead of fights and, you know, doors slamming and dad driving off, because his father left home when my dad was three, alcohol destroyed his life. So my dad didn't have a father. So all he knew was, you know, when things get really hard, someone leaves. And I remember experiencing that as a little boy and being just devastated by it. I remember an argument one time where there was a bowl of coleslaw that got kind of thrown across the room, and it wasn't thrown at anybody, but I just remember in the rage of something that this, you know, coleslaw went flying, and I still remember how scary that was.
Right.
It just was scary. And so I think those were the things that, you know, my way of responding was, I will do whatever I can to make sure those things don't happen. If I have any control over it, I'm going to try to make sure that doesn't happen. And then I wouldn't understand until years later, I began to realize that, you know, even I was born into a situation that was really broken with my mom and dad. My mom was 16 when they got married. My brother came along very shortly after the wedding. So there was a lot of brokenness right out of the gate, very young. And they loved each other, and no question. My mom since has said, you know, it's really important to, you know, we were going to, you know, we had planned, we knew we wanted to be married. But we were just really, really young and really clueless. And there was a lot of shame and a lot of brokenness because of all of that. And so as a result, I was kind of born, literally my mom and dad both will say, yeah, we were at a point of saying, well, maybe this just isn't going to work. Maybe we tried to do this for the right reasons and because we love each other, but, you know, maybe we need to just get a divorce because this is really not working, or maybe we should have another child. And that was me. So I literally was kind of born into this sort of,
like,
okay, here's your role.
Like a child would fix it?
Yes, a child would fix it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that was, you know, the story of sort of what brought me even into the world. Maybe a child that we've planned and wasn't a surprise and didn't. Maybe that's what would help fix our broken relationship. So I began to look back and go, well, duh, no wonder I have this compelling, you know, drive to try to fix what's broken, because that's what I was born to do. Literally, that's kind of what I was brought into the world to do. And I think somehow in ways, very broken ways, you know, but I figured out how to do that, because that's what my assigned role was. And,
to figure out what people wanted would please them and do that? Is that,
yeah,
did you feel
yeah.
like that was kind
how
of
to fix, yeah, how to fix
whatever's
those,
broken.
Those kind of things are broken. I mean, I'm sure music, I'm sure, you know, playing music, I saw that people smiled and it made people happy. I saw that it, you know, it made my dad, you know, proud, and it made my mom proud. And, you know, but the first time I held a guitar and played a song in front of people, and there was applause and we like you, that, you know, that's you pleased us, you know, it's like, okay, I
want
to do that
more
again,
that.
And again and again and again.
You have a new song called Remember to Remember, and I watched the video on that, and you were in the video, you're part of it, it's a journey, but part of it is you're collecting stones along the way. And I love the analogy of that, because it's not often until we get a little bit older in life and we look back and we realize that some of the really hard things become those kind of stones of memoriam.
Yes.
God really used it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I noticed as I was reading through your book, and you talk a lot about falling in love with Mary Beth and your courtship, and then you got married, and it was almost immediately that you realized this was going to be harder than you thought.
Yes. And that was really, you know, that was probably the first thing that I encountered where I really began to realize this is something that I can't fix. And so when I met and married my bride, and we were just so, I was madly in love with her and just knew this is going to be, I can't see my life without this person in it. And then we, you know, we get married and move from, we're in college together in Indiana and go to Nashville, pack up everything we have in our green Ford Pinto, and head to Nashville, Tennessee. We got about $50 in our pocket, and that's all we've got to our name. And I'm going to go pursue music. And it was our drive home. We got married in Springfield, went to Cincinnati, Ohio, that was kind of on the way back to Nashville. We got married on a Saturday. We had to be back on Monday. I had to be at school. She had to be back to work. So we're driving back from Cincinnati. We stayed the night there. Got up the next morning, went to the Cincinnati Zoo. It was raining. None of the animals were out. They were all in their little shelters. So it was kind of like this very sad, melancholy visit to Cincinnati Zoo in an attempt to do something sort of fun before we went back home. And we're driving, and I look over, and I see tears streaming down my wife's face. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I've got to fix this, and I have no idea. And I was like, What's wrong? You know, are you okay? And she just shook her head. I don't know. It's just, you know, the build up for this day, and here we are. And now we go back to, you go to school, I go to work, and this is our life, you know, and that was the beginning. And I would come to know, as I would get to know more and more of my wife, you know, that our pastor would explain to us, you know, years later, it's kind of like Tigger marries Eeyore, but they really didn't know each other. Tigger didn't know anything about really himself or about Eeyore's personality. And then Eeyore, same thing. And now you're like crashing in the middle going, why the melancholy? What's wrong? It's all good. We're good. And she's, you know, feeling, well, why are you so happy and think it's all good? Can't you see I'm just really sad? And, you know, it's like, so that was the beginning of definitely the first signs that would then begin to unfold in our relationship that this is something that I cannot fix. Mm-hmm. And there is brokenness here in my wife's story that we would come to understand through counseling and through friends that would walk with us. And there's a whole lot of brokenness. I didn't know any of this stuff about me and my desire to fix things at this point. I didn't know. I just thought, man, I got it figured out. I can do this.
I'm going to do it.
I mean, I tell a story, and it's an embarrassing story on myself. that I think began me to even understand there's a whole lot of anger inside of this guy who's the nice guy that is really performs well, behaves well, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. One night, as Mary Beth and I were trying to have a conversation about something in our first apartment, been married a few months, and I was determined because the Bible said that, you know, you don't let the sun go down on your anger. And so we're going to fix this before the sun goes down because the Bible says we have to, and we have to do the right thing, and we got to fix it. And in the middle, as the what Mary Beth likes to put it, somewhere in the middle of Stephen making his best point, she drifted off to sleep. I mean, she had the ability to just
tune it out
and say, you know what? No, I'm done. Good night. I'm going to sleep.
Oh my.
And that was like lit a fire inside of my brain. I couldn't even believe it. And I didn't know what to do with this rage that was going on inside of me. So I got out of the bed, and with everything I had inside of me, I punched the wall and put a hole in the drywall. Thankfully, I missed a stud in our rental.
Okay.
Yeah, our first apartment. We didn't get our $100 deposit back, actually, as it turns out, because I didn't know how to fix drywall at that point or fix that hole. You know, and it wasn't, I mean, it was never, ever, you know, any, like, I'm going to make a violence towards my wife or anything.
Right.
But there was just this, what do I do? You know, just there's a wall. And I realized, it's like, because I cannot fix this. She's asleep. She's able to fall asleep in the middle of this and basically saying, you know, I'm not, your son's going down, you know, you're angry. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm mad. I'm frustrated. I'm confused. I don't know how to, you know, give you what you want because I was wanting her to talk to me. I was like, just tell me what's going on. Can you just explain, try to, you know, talk. And she came from a family that didn't really talk and didn't talk about things that were going on. I came from a family where you just yelled and screamed until
it
got talked out and didn't necessarily get resolved, but there was a lot of words, and she came from no words. And so, I was like, we got to talk about this. And so when I would write a song, like I Will Be Here, and the words, the lyrics would say, I will be here when you feel like being quiet, when you need to speak your mind, I will listen. You know, people hear those words and think, oh, that's so sweet. I'm like, there's a whole lot more behind those words. You know, that me saying I will be here when you feel like being quiet is like a huge, huge, hard thing for me to do. Because when you want to be quiet, me just to sit and listen and think, I can't fix this, but I'm going to just have to be okay, you know, and bear with this. So that was definitely some of the first unfixables that I ran against was this reality of this is going to be a lot different than I imagined this was going to be.
Marriage was one of the first places that Stephen came head to head with his inability to fix it. Coming up, Stephen shares about his family's journey with adoption and the desire to bring healing to an orphan's broken story, and how that experience would lead their family to the ultimate unfixable. That's coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. We're so grateful to Stephen Curtis Chapman for sharing his story with us today. Here's part two.
So when I would write a song like I Will Be Here, and the words, the lyrics would say, I will be here when you feel like being quiet, when you need to speak your mind, I will listen. You know, people hear those words and think, oh, that's so sweet. I'm like, there's a whole lot more behind those words. You know, that me saying I will be here when you feel like being quiet is like a huge, huge, hard thing for me to do. Because when you want to be quiet, me just to sit and listen and think, I can't fix this, but I'm going to just have to be okay, you know, and bear with this. So that was definitely some of the first unfixables that I ran against was this reality of this is going to be a lot different than I imagined this was going to be.
One of the things that as I was reading through your book and your stories is that your heart ended up being compelled toward adoption, which again is like fixing an orphan's broken story in a way.
Right.
And I don't know
if
you connect to that.
Yeah,
if that
for
was,
sure.
Do you feel like that came out of that same part of you?
When our daughter Emily went to Haiti with her mom and came home, she was about 11 years old. And when Emily started to talk about it, my wife immediately, partly because of my learning by now that I am Mr., you know, hey, we should we could fix this thing in the world, you know. But I think subliminally, absolutely, you're right. I was thinking when Emily had that idea, I knew Mary Beth immediately, you know, she said, don't even think about it. No, I have three children and that is not my calling. God has to call you to that. And I'm like, yep, you're right. I'm not going to try to be the fourth member of the Trinity, as my pastor would call it, which I was very prone to do because that's what you do when you're a fixer.
Right, right.
You decide, God, you need my help. You're not fixing this quickly enough.
I can help.
Clearly, you need me to fix this and step in here. And I knew the mistake of that because by doing that, I had brought a lot of shame into my wife's life. Just foolishly and sadly trying to be, you know, Mr. Spiritual and, mm-hmm. and you know, godly leader of my family.
If you were more spiritual, you wouldn't be
yes,
struggling
yeah,
here.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yes. And so yeah. Big, big, dumb thing to do. And I had done it many times. And so this is one of those where it's like, all right, God, if this really is something, you would have to do this in my wife's heart. You would have to, and not me. I know better, at least a little bit now, than to try to do that. But in my heart of hearts, I thought this would be an amazing thing because we could fix something mm-hmm. as a family. Mm-hmm. We could fix a broken story in a child's life. And then, you know, the way God would write that story is, you know, we would go adopt Shohanna, get our hearts even more broken, more aware of how broken this story is and how many of these children there are with unfixable stories. So then we come home and begin the work of Shohanna's Hope, which mm-hmm. becomes Show Hope. Again, me going, this is awesome because look at all these little fixes, you know, that mm-hmm. we're getting to be a part of. You know, my experience in the realm of adoption, much like my experience of working in the prison ministries in different seasons in my life. And yet every one of those places is where I have experienced God in the most profound ways. And I've mm-hmm. experienced, you know, Him in those really unfixable, broken places this side of heaven.
That's the word that you use in the book when you talk about the ultimate unfixable and talking about the story of losing Maria and
yes.
in the aftermath of that,
yeah.
how that affected your whole family. And that was, you describe it there as the ultimate unfixable in your mm. life
mm-hmm.
in that season.
Yeah.
I'm curious how that ultimate unfixable impacted you.
You know, I think, again, writing the story, I don't know that I would have even been able to identify some of that drive to be Mr. Fix-It until I wrote my story. That was a lot of how God even used that, which is the reason why this whole song, Remember to Remember, and this theme, this idea of remembering our story, I think is so powerful and so profound, even just in our sitting across the dinner table with friends and, you know, spending time around in a circle at, you know, small group, whatever it might be, those opportunities to remember our own journey and our own story. There's something so powerful about that. And for me, it was one of the gifts that God gave me in writing my story, knowing that that was going to come, that I was going to tell, you know, in detail, just that journey of us losing Maria and the tragedy of that and the trauma and the journey that we're still on, that we're 10 years into, but we're, you know, some days we feel like we've only taken the first kind of baby steps, you know, in that journey, and we're still right in the middle of it. And some days we see some really remarkable healing that's taken place in our lives. And, but I think in the process of, you know, of writing my story, even before I got to that part of my story, I began to see this pattern that I've, from the beginning of my story, wanted to try to fix the things that are broken. And I sort of was looking, even as I was writing my book, I know that big thing is coming. That is the ultimate unfixable thing I've ever experienced and encounter. And until heaven will be just this big broken place in our story, in our life. And so, I think that for me now being able to come to, you know, even understand just a little bit more of what that's been. You know, I see the implications. It's layers upon layers kind of unfixables in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the lives of my children, certainly in the life of my son, you know, that was, you know, driving the car. It was in the life of his brother who had to walk that out with and is still walking that out with his brother.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with that? So I think, you know, just even seeing that and then all of that is like, okay, I have to fix my daughter. I have to fix Joey now. You know, I've got to fix my sweet wife who, you know, has all of this sadness and this mad and sad and all this mixed in together. Because as a mom, not only losing a daughter, but now having to watch her other children struggle with this, that, you know, it's really hard not to go, God, one little thing could have changed all of this and kept us from this struggle and hard and suffering and grief. And then you go, and I'm the only one, you know, like everybody has this. And so then you start heaping shame on yourself. Mary Beth does, for feeling so entitled that I deserved a better story, a better deal than this. God, we adopted these children. Shouldn't we have gotten some kind of a get out of grief card or something from this? And yeah, it was that very act of doing something that we wanted to help this child that brought on this grief and this lifelong trauma, you know, that we would be dealing with counselors and new levels of, oh, that must be PTSD, you know, and, you know, it's all of that stuff, all those layers of things where you go, for our story, at least to this point, this is the ultimate of all unfixables. Mm-hmm. I cannot fix this. I can't even go to enough counselors or read enough books or pray hard enough or any of those things, you know, to fix it. So what's it going to look like to live with these unfixables and not spend my life and energy cursing them? But is there actually a way to begin to receive those and even bless those for the deeper understanding of God's grace and God's presence with us? Because there's no way I would be sitting here having this conversation with you apart from the grace of God and apart from him being with us and for us in the midst of it, even though he doesn't reveal himself in the ways exactly that I would love for him to or want him to. But there's no question that he has been faithful and he's been with us on this journey.
One of the things, as I was reading your book, you shared in it a part of a letter from Emily that she wrote to you.
Yes.
And I thought, you can look back, and I don't know that you'd call any of these hard things gifts, but you can see how God used them in ways in your life. I just want to share just a couple of things that she wrote in that letter. She said, one of the best things, ironically, was your inability to fix it. If you could have fixed it all, why would I have needed to turn to God? And I don't know that you would have thought of it that way at the time, but it seems like now in hindsight, having some of those situations that you couldn't fix, that God used it.
Oh, yeah.
In some
Absolutely.
Ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that it, you know, that is the upside downness of the God's kingdom and his ways. When I look back, and it's the reason why I say it's all these unfixable places where I've encountered and experienced God in the most profound ways, because it forces me, you know, to a place of, you know, desperation, what I would even call of desperate trust, of desperate hope, to say, God, I don't have anything else, you know, to hold on to, because I can't fix this. I can't make this better. And so I've got one or two options. I'm going to shake my fist and just say, how dare you, and get more angry and more bitter. Or I'm going to say with Job, you give, you take away. I'm going to trust you. And as I have done that, three steps forward, two steps back, not always doing it. My most prayed prayer, I've said a million times, is I believe, help my unbelief, in the same breath. You know, God, I believe, I trust you, help my unbelief, help my lack of trust. And as I've done that, I found when I've said, okay, God, I'm going to trust you, and this, I can't fix this. I want you to fix it. I want to demand that you fix it. But whether you do now or ultimately, I do believe, and I'm staking all on believing that there is a day coming when you will wipe every tear from our eyes as you promised, and you will fix everything that's broken. But that's not going to happen until heaven. And so I'm going to trust that, and I'm going to worship you, and I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to let go of it for at least the next 15 minutes, because I'll probably pick it back up in 15 minutes, but right now. And when I've done that, and as I've done that, it's the only time when sanity returns to my brain. You know, it's King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, when he says, I lifted my eyes to heaven and my sanity returned. It's literally a matter of you know, not being spiritual, not trying to sound and act and appear, you know, like I got it together. It's literally, in our case, many times, it's a matter of just pure sanity. It's just the only thing that gives me back sanity is to just say, God, I have to trust you with this, because everything inside of me wants to fix what is so broken beyond any possible way of me fixing. All these little, the shrapnel has gone everywhere in my family and the ways I see it sometimes played out, and the way I see it played out in my own heart. And I'm like, God, I'm going to have to trust you with this again and again and again.
Stephen has written a song called Remember to Remember, and in it he describes how you can keep going when you've experienced the kind of trauma and tragedy that his family has. You remember the way God led you to the mountaintop and carried you through the valley. He says, until I'm home, I'm resting all my hope and trust in the only one whose name is God with us. You can learn more about Stephen's story, his music, and about Show Hope at StephenCurtisChapman.com. It takes a team to make Epic. Big thanks to Jason Rackow and Ted Ross for help with production. Thanks to Stephen Johnson for our show's theme song. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at MyFaithRadio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.